Mark your calendars for December 2nd and make plans to be at the Zumbrunnen Angus annual bull and female sale. 120 Angus bulls, 80 females, and several exciting genetic lots will be for sale at the ranch and on DV Auction. Calving these bulls that are safe for heifers, plus 75 PAP-tested age bulls, and the majority of the replacement heifers are being offered. Free bull delivery in the lower 48 and volume discounts offered as well. Bring the family for story time with children's book author Amanda Radke and get the kids entered for the popular Youth Heifer Giveaway. Request a catalog at zbangus.com and hope to see you at the sale. Life is too short for a bad steak. The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by All American Angus Beef, a guaranteed five-star restaurant quality beef eating experience from family ranches like mine, available only at bidonbeef.com. When you bid on beef with us, you're not just scoring sizzling steaks and burgers. You're supporting an America First agenda where beef-loving families can bid and buy with confidence, knowing exactly where their beef comes from. Join our growing community at bidonbeef.com and use code RADKEY for $10 off your next auction. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey everyone, it's Amanda Radke back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things in their rural communities to make agriculture and this country stronger. I'm back today with a return guest. You guys know and love Dave Duquette of Western Justice. He's been a strong and clear voice for agriculture and the rural way of life for years and years now. He's a Marine, he is a veteran, he's a friend, and he is a patriot. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks for having me on.
It's been way too long, and you've been very busy, my friend. And I have just gotten done watching your new documentary. If you guys listen, get to the end of this episode and you don't go watch this documentary, you're missing out on something very important. But you have a new documentary out. It is the unreal story of property rights that I think people need to know about. So I'm going to open the show to you. Just, Dave, tell me what's going on over there. What is the story?
It was really interesting because we got a call from a rancher over there, a seventh generation ranch. This is all about two of the founding families of Pocatello, Idaho. And half of Pocatello wouldn't even be developed if it wasn't for them donating or selling off part of their ranches for people to be able to develop. And the city was trying to forcibly annex their ranches into the city limits, which would, as anybody knows, when you go to the city limits from exclusive farm use or ranching use, your taxes go through the roof. So it would have made the taxes go from $50,000 a year to couple million a year, and it would have been unsustainable for them. I mean, these people aren't rich. They're land rich, but they're not rich financially. So they had some prime development ground there. They wanted to develop some of it. These developers that came in from Utah were as corrupt as it gets. This whole story is the real life Yellowstone without the pretty people and the killing. You know, that's the way I put it to people. And it's a very interesting scenario, to the point where you and I were talking about just a few minutes ago. When we started off with this thing, we went in to do a short documentary about this forced annexation, try to get the state to change the law to where these cities couldn't do a forced annexation on folks like this that didn't want it. The more interviews we did, the more we realized something was really, really wrong here. And so that's when I convinced them to bring in some friends of mine who are the best in the world. They're former military. I'm not going to get too deep into who they are, but they're the best in the world at investigating. They were part of the Pentagon during the war. They were the guys that knew everything going on all around the world. We brought them in, and in a month and a half, they were able to figure out what was going on, and to the point where we had a meeting with the FBI. Wow. And they were like, we got this cross the state line, so we got to talk to the FBI. Well, they all knew from being in the Pentagon, they knew FBI folks. So we got in a meeting with them, and the FBI knew something was wrong here, but they'd been investigating for a year and a half and were totally stonewalled. And my guys found everything. They went in there and found it all. So it's a very deep dive. This documentary is a deep dive into all that. It's very nefarious and not so much salacious, but it shows the corruption and what people will do for money. And it's amazing. I don't want to give too much away, but the two main players from the development company, the companies, were all shell corporations. They weren't anything. They'd never done anything before. And they beat feet out of town. One was found in Lahaina right after the fires, trying to run the same scam over there in Lahaina. So luckily, I know some ranchers over there on that island, and I was able to call them and say, hey, you guys poke around and see if this guy's there, and let everybody know what a tool this guy is. And, you know, he's a scam artist, and try to get him, don't let anybody do any business with him, because he'll just take their money and run. The saddest part is they did it under the guise of being religious. To me, that was the underlying, we don't go there in the documentary, but it was very interesting how upstanding these people look in the community versus what they were doing behind the scenes. And the mayor's involved, the judge that's there was involved, several other big players in the area were involved, city council. I mean, it's just a cesspool over there in Pocatello of people who were just trying to take advantage of the situation and make some money. And it was a smart city. That's what they were planning. So that's another big thing that we all look at agriculture and all the cities swallowing up agriculture. And we go, hey, we're not with this plan for, I mean, when they go in and try to take away everything for a plan for a smart city, that's probably not the best thing we can do.
I see this theme all across the country, and in South Dakota, mm-hmm. You've got these public-private partnerships, and they call it economic development, using taxpayer dollars, and it's for the good of everybody. And so that justifies the use of eminent domain, because we can bring more to the tax base. We can bring more to the community than your land. And to me, I just see farmers and ranchers are sitting ducks, that your land, it's a business, but if somebody else decides I can do better with it, they're going to find the avenues and the pathways, and they have the avenues and the pathways to take it. So In your experience, what can be done to protect your land, your legacy, your family's farm and ranch from encroachment when, like you said, producers they're not cash rich, they're sitting on assets, but it's not like they have money to pour into legal fights and endless hours spent with lawyers and at county commission offices and meetings and all the like. What can people do?
Be aware of the people that are out there, the organizations out there, because that'll help you. I always tell people, they go, well, I get labeled as an ambulance chaser by some people, because everything we get involved in is like almost like a last minute, very rushed deal, because These people have gone and they've wasted all their time trying to get the big organizations to do something for them, or their insurance or whatever it is, and they don't know the game plan. They don't know how to fight back against this stuff. And I'm the guy that gets the call when all else fails. So they hear about Western Justice or Dave Duquette, or when I was at Protect the Harvest, they hear about us there. So I'm the one at the very end of these things that gets the call, and I've got to go in and try to clean up a mess, you know? So that's why the whole ambulance chaser theme and it's funny, because even some of our own people, I mean, agriculture as a whole is its own worst enemy, because we have so many smart people. They think they know better. And a lot of farmers, I mean, you know, a lot of farmers and ranchers, and they got a lot of time to think. And they're brilliant people. there's a lot of brilliant people in those industries. I mean, nearing genius level kind of brilliance. And everybody thinks farmer's just a dumbass. I mean, that's just basically what the general populace, that's what they think. They think, oh, you just go plow and put stuff in and grow crops and you're not a smart guy. But these guys are very intelligent. I see this kind of stuff a lot in the watersheds with water issues. And these farmers think they're going to outsmart CBD, you know, Center for Biological Diversity, and their 35 or 40 lawyers they have there that are, have been doing this stuff for 20 plus years. And they go in there and they go in to negotiate with them, and they think they're going to be the first set of farmers to outwit the attorneys in the game plan at CBD. Well,
you guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKE to save, or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount. Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the deluxe chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtough.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
Well, they end up, these irrigation districts or folks like that, they go in and they think they're going to go out with them, and they end up getting everything taken away. Madras, Oregon is a great example of that. But CBD went in there. Pretty soon, it's a very high agriculture area in Madras, Oregon. They've got lots of water, but CBD has now made it so that they're going to lose all their CFSs out of the reservoir that the farmers built with their own money back, I think it was in the 60s, may have even been earlier in the 60s. But Wickiup Reservoir, they built all that on their own. Now they're going to be out of water because CBD wants to see all that water go down the river instead of being in the reservoir. So they're going to be dumping out 750 CFS pretty soon through, you know, year round, all winter. And this is the thought process of a lot of our people. I went into a meeting at that irrigation district, and the guy, I asked him, you know, because it's over a frog, a spotted frog. That's why they say they need to push water. I said, I'm just a dumb high school educated Marine, but I tell you what, I do know that frogs hibernate in the winter. So why do they need all that water going down the river when it's snowing and frozen and all that cold? Why do they need that? And the head of the irrigation district looked at me and he goes, well, that's what the, you know, you have to talk to the biologist about that. I said, didn't you guys ask that? Didn't you guys ask that question? Because that seems like the most basic question you could ask.
Yep.
And they just were like dumbfounded and mad at me for bringing the question up. You know, things like that are going on. I get calls back to your remark about, you know, it's going on all over the country. The more people see this documentary, the more people that call me or email me going, hey, we got this going on here. Can you help us here? And the biggest problem, like you said, is they don't have the money to do that. Luckily in Pocatello, Western Justice doesn't have the extra money to go produce a major documentary. An Emmy Emmy award-winning documentary, by the way.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah. So we don't have the extra money to do that kind of stuff as of right now. Hopefully someday we will. Agriculture needs to come together and go, we're going to fight back. We're not going to sit here and take this and not do something about it where people can actually see what's going on. And then everybody starts to have hope that hopefully they can change something. Because right now, and I'll get back to the great Pocatello land grab, at the very end of it, you know, it kind of sets the stage for another episode. But since then, the RUPS have been able, they won an Idaho Supreme Court case to be able to hear their day in court. The judge, the corrupt judge in this thing, was not even allowing, I don't remember exact number of the motions, but 40 some motions that he wouldn't even hear from their side. He wouldn't even listen to. And everything that the attorneys of the developers did, he would hear and he would do something with. So he vacated that whole case of the RUPS. And now the Supreme Court said, no, wait a minute, that was wrong. And they get their day in court because they deserve their day in court. So now it's back in the court system again, a different judge and a judge that knows that he better hear the whole case. Mm-hmm. So after the attorneys for these two development companies went and watched the documentary at the theater, which was sold out for 3 or 4 weeks in Pocatello. I mean, and they never, two theaters. So it was 300 people, 150 each. It was sold out for that long there. So almost everybody in town and the neighboring towns went in there and watched it. And anyway, the two attorneys went and watched it. And there was a couple of gals that were outside talking to them afterwards. And they were just disparaging us and how it was all lies and all this stuff. One of the gals had her phone on, recording it in her pocket. So it was quite entertaining because the day after they went and watched it, I got a very threatening letter from those attorneys. Okay. And I just kind of laughed. I made a big joke out of the email I sent them back. And I just told them, I'm not some fragile little flower from your hometown. You're not going to scare me with your deal. I got a lot bigger guns for attorneys than, you know, around us that do things for me for free because of what I do. I've got a lot of great, I mean, some of the greatest law minds in the country would back me up for free and help me out. I haven't heard back from them, but it's quite entertaining because I sent them quite a colorful little email back to them. And my attorneys were laughing. My friends that are attorneys are like the guy that, you remember the whole situation with Gretchen Whitmer where they were supposedly trying to kidnap her?
I do.
So the attorney that got those guys off and figured out there was more FBI informants in there than there were people they were trying to set up to create a stink. That attorney is a great friend of mine. And he was very colorful in what he had to say about these attorneys saying that. And he goes, you want me to respond to him? I go, no, I'll respond to him. I'm all right. Appreciate it.
So you never get yourself into trouble, do you?
Yeah, no.
And so this documentary, I know you had kind of wanted to float it by some of these big networks, but what was the response? Too hot in the kitchen or what?
I don't know if they never said that specifically, but we tried to get it on Amazon Prime. I tried to, because I wanted to raise money for, and once you get on those, you know, it goes on for free. And if it gets on the algorithm and a lot of people start watching it, then you start monetizing it.
Yep.
Well, Amazon Prime wouldn't do it. Netflix wouldn't do it. I was really hoping to get it on Netflix because that's one of those crime stories that, you know, people sit at night when they're getting ready to go to bed or whatever. They sit and watch it. And I wanted that to be one of those. And I couldn't get Netflix to do anything. And I spent a year and a half dinging around, going back and forth, waiting a month for them to respond and to whatever. And finally just decided we're going to put it on YouTube for free and try to get our YouTube channel up, and maybe hopefully we can monetize some, you know, with enough views, we can monetize our YouTube channel to where we can produce more of this stuff or more of that one. And in, I think it's been up 8 days, it's gotten 15,500 views now in 8 days. It's not viral by any means. I wouldn't consider that viral, but that's a lot more people that have seen it than prior to that going up. So
And I will provide the direct link so folks can watch it in the show notes as well. But it's called The Great Pocatello Land Grab. And okay, how did the Emmy Award come about? I just have to ask.
Oh, well, my producer, who's from New York, and he's like a 7-time Emmy Award winner, great guy. He's from upstate New York, just a good human. And he texted me, he goes, how's it feel to be an Emmy nominated producer? And he texted me the 2 nominations. And we were nominated for 2 Emmys. And so it was funny because I bought a table for my whole crew at the Emmys. We went there and we were in the back of the room. There's probably 2,000 to 3,000 people, tables of 10 or 12, whatever it was, in this room. And it's about a 5-hour program because there's so many different categories. And the first one that we were nominated for came and went. We didn't get it. So we were kind of getting, you know, we had a couple cocktails. We're all sitting back there just BS and listening to all the crap going on. And then the second one came up and we won it. And I mean, that room lit up because we all jumped out of our seats and we're making a bunch of cowboys back there making a bunch of noise. And we ran up to the stage and everybody was clapping for us because we were so excited. Nobody else was that excited about it. But it was the smart ass in me was thinking, you know, there was a lot of people in that group, that program that got up on stage and they're like crying because they've been in the business for 30 years and they, you know, hadn't won an Emmy yet. It was their first Emmy. And all I could think was, man, what kind of slackers are these guys? I got one on my first one. I'll probably never get another one, but you know.
Well, did you get pictures from that? I'm going to have to see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got
it. Okay, you'll have to send me stuff. This show is made possible with the support of CK6 Consulting, the trusted name in nation-leading Angus genetics, where the focus is connecting great people to great cattle. Stay ahead of the curve by following CK6 sales at ck6consulting.com or reach out to the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, Cody Fleeman, or myself. Ready to take your program to the next level? Visit ck6source.com, your gateway to the best in performance-driven Angus bulls on the market. Save the date, folks. The second annual President's Day Bull Sale at Radke Land and Cattle is happening February 16th, 2026, and it's bigger than ever before. Featuring 70-plus Angus and Limousine bulls and females, a bid on beef auction, and a complimentary meal hosted by All-American Angus Beef, this is a sale built on what matters most: God, family, country, and cattle. Request your catalog today at RadkeLandandCattle.com and join us for a celebration of the heart of rural America right at my ranch, north of Mitchell, South Dakota. See you there. You know, ironically, I met you on the premiere of a different movie, The Stand at Paxton County. What was that, 2020? But you have been kind of at the forefront of a lot of different fights where family farms and their properties are being threatened by either politicians or the law or someone with a nefarious agenda. So talk to me a little bit about what Western Justice is involved in right now. What fights are you guys paying attention to?
Well, the big one, really, there's 2 big ones. We're bringing together a big coalition called the Wolf Coalition. It's the Wildlife Oversight and Land Use Front. And we need all the states to come together on this issue. And that's always a big problem, especially for agriculture, because one state doesn't want to help another state. And, you know, right now you got Montana, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, that are all delisted, Eastern Washington, they're all delisted from in Eastern Oregon, delisted on a federal level. Well, the biggest thing we got to do, and the one thing we really have to do, is get the delisting on these gray wolves. Because they are 3 times over the recovery rate that CBD and all those groups that wanted them put out there, they're 3 times over the recovery amount that they said would be fully recovered. And they're still on the ESA. So we're working with the administration to get them delisted from the ESA. And once that on a federal level, we need to do it through Congress so it actually sticks this time. Because, you know, the first Trump administration, they delisted them under Director Skipwith, which is really a Skipwith. She's really a Giacometto, or Skipwith Giacometto, but she was the Fish and Wildlife Director. They were delisted under her. Then they got the CBD filed a lawsuit in the Biden administration, The Biden administration didn't fight it, didn't even go to court. So they won the lawsuit and got them put back on the Endangered Species Act. So now, once that happens, then the states are going to have to follow a federal mandate to manage the wolves. Now, the way we've worded it and the way we're going to try to put it out there is that they have to meet or exceed federal mandates on management. And the reason we did that is because if we just said they got to meet a federal mandate on management, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, and Idaho are not going to want to be a part of it because they already have a great plan and management situation going on. That's why we put in the exceed. They can exceed it. And that's where states like California, Washington, and Oregon, and Colorado won't be able to just have their willy-nilly, we're going to put all these wolves out here, and we want them here, and we want them there, and we want them all over, and we don't care. And as you may have seen, I don't know if you saw in the news lately, but they finally killed that Sierraville pack, Sierra Valley in California, that was killing 3 to 5 calves a night. I mean, that's how bad it was up there. The reason U.S. Fish and Wildlife was able to do that was because the human health risk was they had Ring doorbell cameras, other camera systems in the town of Sierraville that showed these wolves coming through town at night. Wow. So the Sierra Valley is all summer range. So all those cows are out now. So there's no deer left. The only deer in the area are living in town to stay away from the wolves. And everything else has moved out. There's no deer, no elk, no moose, no nothing. So they were worried that these things were going to come into town and start taking everybody's 4-H animals. I mean, they're opportunists. They're going to take a dog, a cat, or a kid, you know, or, you know, whatever they can get. So the human health risk was very high. So they went in and removed that pack. So, wow. But that's the kind of thing that California wasn't going to do. Gavin Newsom and his Fish and Wildlife Director were absolutely not going to do anything. They want to see wolves all the way through California. Hell, they got them all the way down in Corona. I've got video of game cam footage and pictures and video of them down there on a gun club in Corona, California, which is just straight east of L.A. Yeah, and these are big dogs. You look at the size of these things, and I have people argue with me that they're 60 pounds or 100 pounds. They're the largest gray wolf ever taken was over 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. And that's the largest one on record. The bigger males are going to average, you know, 150 pounds. Mm-hmm. And what they do, the pictures I've seen and how they kill cattle and all of that, a lot of people don't even have a clue about. Minnesota was the petri dish and the problem. I mean, they've been dealing with this for so long. The Minnesota people and the ranchers, so many of them have gone out of business because of wolves. Mm-hmm. And they can't do anything about them in Minnesota. I mean, it is like forbidden to do anything. So that's a big problem.
I've met with Minnesota farmers up in the northern part, and it's unreal what bad policies can do to good people and good livestock. Yeah. And there's no common sense. And it seems like, well, I don't think anything's an accident. Right. Death by 1,000 cuts. Talk to me a little bit about, I had seen a post on your Facebook page talking about America's public lands are in crisis and that you are wanting to look at the 1971 Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've been on that for a long, long time. I mean, my whole career, almost 20 years now of doing politics. We are going to do a documentary series and we're calling it Love to Death. And that document, and that's starting off on the trailer for it. The first little bit is on our YouTube also. The reason we called it Love to Death is because these advocates, these wild horse advocates, love the horses so much they're killing them out on the range. When you go out as a lifelong horseman, I go out there and there's horses that will come up to you and try to eat your shirt or try to drink out of a water bottle. That wouldn't get anywhere near you. They wouldn't get within 400 yards of you if they were healthy.
Right.
And because they're starving and they're dying of thirst. And you go watch that trailer and it's sickening. The trailer shows where there's a little sorrel horse and it's in Nevada and he's probably a stud colt and he's probably a 1 on the scale, the Heineke scale of his fitness. You know, he's horrible. I mean, that thing probably tipped over and died a couple weeks later. But they were on a what used to be a viable spring, and they had packed it in so bad that it was just a cup of water. I went down with a little claw hammer and cleaned it out, and I could get to where there was a gallon of water. But these horses, that was the only water source for over 20 miles in that area. So these horses were standing around there trying to tank up on water, and they couldn't. And they couldn't go far enough once they did that to go get anything to eat. So there was a bunch of horses there that were starving. It's sickening to watch. I mean, wow. Sickening to see and watch. If it wasn't, you know, they want ranchers off the rangelands, they want them all out of there. But the reality is there would be million acre swaths of Nevada, or bigger even than that, of Nevada, Eastern Oregon, Southeast Oregon, that have no water in them if it wasn't for the ranchers. And the ranchers are putting in solar wells now, or they haul water out. That's the only way those places get grazed. I mean, you go all the way back to Lewis and Clark when he went across those areas, and they had to eat their own horses because his party didn't have, there was no wildlife because there's no water. There was grass and there was sagebrush and white sage, which cattle do really well on, but there was no water. So yeah. The rancher is the only thing out there keeping, they've actually rejuvenated wildlife in a lot of areas of the West. Mm-hmm. So well,
the fight continues on all fronts. And it seems like some of these bad policies stick around, I mean, for a generation or longer. Yeah. And it takes people like you being willing to keep chipping away at it, fighting for what's right. And, you know, as we close out the show today, Dave, I guess, number one, how can folks support Western Justice and all the things that you're doing, and where can they find your work?
So our C4, we have a C4 and a C3. Our C3 does all of our education. It does all our legal stuff that we do. So we can do a lot through our C3. And we have some bigger donors that are foundation type donors. They've got a big foundation or a family trust or something there that they can donate to a C3 out of. That's where most of those kind of people go to. But our base is our membership in our C4, which is our legislative fund. And that is a membership based kind of a deal. It's just like an NRA kind of membership. So it has different levels. They don't really mean anything. The only reason I went different levels was because I had people wanting to give us more money than just the $50 that we started off as a member. Now we're down to where we got people that we have a $25 all the way to $1,000 membership. And honestly, I probably get more $500 and $1,000 members than I do the $25 members. So most people want to, because of what, once they know what we do and how we're doing it, they want to support us a lot more than just a little bit.
Absolutely. And so the website is westernjustice.info. You can go there, check out all the initiatives and things that they're working on, become a member and get updates on all the documentaries and the work that they're doing. Dave, to close out the show, I guess, what advice would you have for folks? They own some land, they're in agriculture, they love this Western way of life that we hold dear. How do they get involved or get active in being advocates and fighting for themselves?
You got to be in the fight. If I go into an area, I've got to have the Aaron Brockovich of the area kind of a deal. That's the way I lay it out of that area. Because if I try to go in, a lot of times I hear, oh, we don't want somebody from out of town working on this. And people get very territorial. So I got to have somebody like you, with what you've done in South Dakota, bring us in and say, hey, no, we need this to help out. And one of the things that a lot of the groups do is they don't want to give credit to anybody else because they don't want to lose their membership, or they don't want to have another group siphon them off. Become a member of all these organizations. Be a part of what is going on and be in the know. Pay attention to what's going on in your area and alert us if there's bad animal rights, bad policy going on, whether it's water issues or whatever. We have a team. We saved one ranch in Oregon because we got the call late in the game from a friend of mine that's a ranch manager there. We saved them from a $35 million DOJ lawsuit. And that was just us going in there and putting the team together, because I know all these people, on how to put the team together to be able to fight back against that stuff. And that's what we do the best. We are able to coordinate the fight. I don't have a lot of people on staff, but what I have is a lot of friends that I know and partners that come in and can work through those situations. And back to your deal about the, you know, how people don't have the ability to afford to do it. that's one of the reasons we're trying to build a huge legal fund in Western Justice, our C3. So people can donate to that, like I said, through foundations or whatever, to the legal fund. And that'll help people that can't afford to do the fight. We've got several fights going on right now that the ranchers are funding, and it's putting them at a major deficit and in a hard time. But water issues and land use issues, that we are coordinating those fights. So there's a lot of things I can't talk about because they're in litigation and that kind of stuff. So we just have to roll on and tell people what we can, tell them what we do.
I understand that. And definitely, I think, let this be a word of encouragement for you all listeners, that apathy has gotten us to this point to a degree. Yeah. If you want to maintain your life in rural America on the land, unfortunately, this has to become kind of a part of your business model. Paying attention, showing up to meetings, and making the calls and the connections and getting the right people in the room. And if you think you can't make a difference, I'm telling you, you can. But it takes getting off the bench and getting in the arena. And that's what my friend Dave Duquette does every single day with Western Justice. Go check out the new documentary. Again, I'll link it in the show notes. And Dave, thanks for coming on the show once again.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Amanda. Great to see you.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. Be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.